facebook.com/New Orleans Mission, and their number is 504-523-2116. Do you want new wave or do you want the truth? The Atomic Lawn on WTUL spends a bristling, heaping selection of international punk, post-punk, and hardcore, and also features live performances and interviews by local and touring bands. The Atomic Lawn is every Friday from 10 to midnight here on WTUL New Orleans.
Mandatory minimum sentences. Let me back up for a second. And I'm specifically not talking about Orleans Parish with regard to something I'm going to tell you, and I'm more specifically talking about your neighbors and North Louisiana, but some of your neighbors. So there's the sentence. In lots of state, in ours, the length of our sentences, that is the sentence a Louisiana judge, on average, gives an offender for the same crime is significantly longer than the sentence for the same crime in the other southern states. Our judges love long sentences. We also, yes, there are people in the prison. About 46% of the people in prison are there for crimes of violence. This administration in Baton Rouge will not discuss the issue of crimes of violence. So what happens? A 19-year-old commits an armed robbery. Yeah, an armed robbery, I'm going to tell you, an armed robbery is a murder, but thank God the gun didn't go off. It's an extremely dangerous crime. There is no doubt about that. But what do we know? This is what we know. This is what the neuroscientists tell us. This is pure D science. The brain does not finish forming until age 25. And the last part of the brain to form, where are the teachers in the room? Yeah. The last part of the brain to form is the prefrontal lobe. That's called executive function. The part of the brain that makes you have judgment. I always talk about data, but just a little bit of personal experience. So I have a 25-year-old son and a 23-year-old son, and my 25-year-old son is a distinctly different human being than he was at age 22. Yes. Thank God for that last 3 years. Yes. That's all I have. Yes. Thank God. Yes. So what happens, and then we also know that for whole lots of reasons, some of them being chemistry, we age out of violence. And it's not just that we get old and tired, but yes, it is that we get old and tired. But we also, our hormone levels straighten out as we get older. Our fight or flight calms down. We know that just with the physical biochemistry of it all is that as we age out of violence. However, our sentencing structure pays no attention to that. So, how many of you have ever been up to Angola? Okay. Now, you want to tell me that Gregory Jennings, age 60, who's there for murder, a murder committed during a drug deal when he was 19 years old. I'm sorry, Gregory Jennings is not a danger to anyone. Not to anyone. And you might be here tonight because you have a sense of humanity. Let's put aside your sense of humanity. How many of you had kids who went to public school? And there's public schools, were they properly funded?
No.
No.
My children's.
Yours was?
Good. It wasn't in the state of Louisiana.
Not yet, well, see, not wait. Come on. So here's the deal. You know, Gregory Jennings makes rocking chairs. And he takes the money he makes on his rocking chairs and he sends it to a church school at Tangipahoa. Now, if Gregory Jennings wasn't in jail, we wouldn't be paying not just to house him, we wouldn't be paying for his heart condition, his hypertension, his high blood pressure. We wouldn't be paying for his buddy's cancer treatment. That money would be paying to improve the situation in Louisiana classrooms. That's just smart. We call that justice reinvestment. In the other southern states, when the money that was saved by reducing incarceration rates, 50% of that money, pretty not in every state, but in a lot of states, was driven back into the criminal justice system with regard to reentry programming. And so the incarceration money was put to mental health treatment, drug treatment, education, enhanced probation services, and on and on. We have saved some money in Louisiana, and we have reduced our incarceration numbers from 40,000 to 37,000 and change. Now, I have to tell you, it was an enormous, enormous amount of work for that little itty-bitty change. That's not enough. So what am I telling you? I am telling you, yeah, it is not politically popular to adjust the sentencing structure for crimes of violence. But if we don't create parole eligibility for aging offenders, we will continue to pay extraordinary amounts of money to house people who are not a danger to anyone. So there's that. Of the roughly 40,000 people in Louisiana prisons, half, just about exactly half, are housed in local facilities. Does anybody here live in Jefferson Parish? We got a couple Lone Rangers out there. So I was a trial judge in Jefferson Parish for 10 years, and in that entire 10 years, I thought that when I sentenced somebody to incarcerated time, I don't know where I thought, I don't know why I thought this. I thought they were going to a reception center at Hunt, and they were getting sent to a facility depending upon risk, needs, that sort of thing. No. I didn't find this out until after I was on the Court of Appeal. Overwhelmingly, the sheriff, and there's something different going on in Orleans right now because they're trying a sort of a pilot thing where they actually, and I'm not talking about reentry court, they're trying something where they actually do attempt to send offenders to a facility that will benefit, will address the risks and needs of the offender. Overwhelmingly, in Louisiana, it is the local sheriff who decides where the offenders will be housed. So, the offenders that go from Jefferson Parish, if they're young and they're healthy, and if they have a job skill in particular, they are going to a private prison in northwest Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you what we know. We know that if an offender who is incarcerated, and I'm not telling, this isn't stuff that is made up. This is all based on data, and I can send you lots and lots and lots of slides, but so would the Department of Corrections send you. All of my data comes from the Louisiana State Department of Corrections or from the United States government or from Pew Center for the States, which collects and works with the government. My sheriff sends almost all of my healthy offenders to either a private prison in northwest Louisiana outside Shreveport or to a prison run by the sheriff in Winsboro, Louisiana.
The sheriff of Winsboro.
No programming. Yeah, the sheriff of Winsboro is really mad at me. He screamed at one of my law clerks because that sheriff provides no programming. Two hots and a cot. That's it. Two hots and a cot. So if the Jefferson Parish offender has a drug problem and they go to Winsboro, the best hope they're going to get is that DOC engages in reentry before they are released. And the hope was Orleans Parish has some folks who come back to Orleans Parish for reentry.
But why would Orleans take my prisoners? They've got enough problem with their own prisoners. And so the Department of Corrections has to find a place to send the Jefferson Parish prisoners back. But meantime, the whole time they're up there in Winnsboro, they have no family contact because nobody can get to them.
Excuse me, Judge, that's quite an announcement. There's a white four-door Kia blocking the driveway. We need you to move it, please.
So what we know is that we know that sentences that address the risks and needs of the particular offender are more likely to result in successful outcome than those that don't. We know that. But overwhelming numbers of our offenders go sit in a local facility with no programming. Now, how do you change that? Well, maybe you pass a statute that says, well, okay, we can't just turn the lights out. We can't one day just say sheriffs aren't going to house any more state offenders, because there are huge, huge places in North Louisiana where the biggest employer is the sheriff. Mm. Right. And it's interesting, the DAs are a little more circumspect about what they say. At some point in every conversation with the Sheriff's Association, somebody says, we need the prisoners. I want you to think about that. I want you to think about the fact that we are running portions of the state's economy on the backs of human beings. Think about that. And we'll talk about how you change that at the end, but I probably am preaching to the choir. But
we choir need to know what you're talking about.
Right. So we know that if a sentence is tailored to the risks and needs of the offender, the sentence is more likely to be successful. Oh, and by the way, when you are incarcerated and you need medical treatment or mental health treatment, the state of Louisiana pays 100%. It comes out of the general fund. There's no Medicare, there is no Medicaid with regard to offenders who are on probation or parole, we have state-run nursing homes that will take our aging prison population. If we put them on geriatric parole and they go to a nursing home, Medicare, Medicaid covers. So how stupid is that? Just think about that. How stupid is that? So in the other southern states, a whole bunch of different things have happened, some of which will never, ever happen in Louisiana. In some southern states, they have something called sentencing guidelines. Sentencing guidelines are not a panacea. What they say is, the average sentence for an armed robbery in the state of Louisiana for a first offender who is between the ages of 18 and 25 is 10 years. And it is presumed that the judge will sentence that sentence unless there are extraneous circumstances. We don't have sentencing guidelines. We did for about 10 minutes between 1994 and 1997, and they went away. The district attorneys hated them. Other southern states, though, and many states in the country, engage in something called risk needs assessment pre-sentence. And that means that a simple tool, a test, is given to an offender before sentence, and the offender's risks and needs are determined. In some states, it occurs for all offenses. In some states, it occurs only for nonviolent crimes. But those offenders receive a sentence that is geared toward their risk of reoffending, their risk of indicia of violence, and their needs. We in Louisiana, about 70% of the people we house have either a mental health, a drug, or an alcohol program. But we don't know that. We, the sentencing judge, we don't know that because we don't engage in risk needs assessment. Now, This is what, this is, here are the things that are said about that. One, 90% of my sentences are the result of a plea agreement, and I just got to do what the DA says. I'm sorry.
Whoa.
It is the judge who is responsible for the sentence. It is the judge. Now, I will tell you this, that that's a really nice statement, but in some particular parishes, most particularly in Orleans, Jefferson, and St. Tammany parishes, except they elected a new DA Saturday. Maybe this won't be under Warren Montgomery. We'll see. If you have a prior crime and you don't agree to a plea agreement, you will be double billed or triple billed, or and then your sentence range, and that's a matter of practice, case in and case out. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That does not go on around the rest of the state. You talk to the DA in a Boyle's Parish, and he says, Ricky, I may be double bill three guys in a year, and I double bill the guys who are out of control. I don't double bill my drug offenders. I deal with them the way I deal with them. But in these three parishes, and I'm going to tell you where it came from. I was an assistant DA under Harry Connick when Judge Willard was, I don't know where he was, in grammar school, no, probably not even. And Harry Connick's philosophy was every person got multiple billed. And Harry Connick taught me and Paul Connick and Leon Canizero and that guy Walter Reed in St. Tammany.
Can you turn your phones off, please?
And so that's what everybody thinks, that's the way to go. And that does constrain the judge, but it doesn't constrain the judge from a conversation, from saying, wait a minute, I mean, let's talk about this. How old is this guy, and how much time do we really have to give this guy in order to protect society and to straighten the guy out? How much time? The other big argument about risk needs assessment is this. It takes too much time. I mean, my criminal dockets, which I did week in and week out, I had 80 cases on a criminal docket many, many days. Yes, it's a lot of cases. The other states with the same kind of dockets have done it and have done it successfully. They have created tools, and we've got the tool. We know what the tools are. They've created tools to take little or no time, but give enough information to meet at a sentence which addresses the particular offender's needs. We can do that. That's not hard. Going back to the sheriffs and this problem of having all of these offenders being housed by the sheriffs and relying, and the criminal justice system as at large, relying upon the money. So, if the secretary of the Department of Corrections had his druthers, if he had it his way, and operating within the realities, what he would say is, who, by the way, Jimmy LeBlanc is the biggest proponent of sentencing reform in the state of Louisiana, and he runs your prison system, which is pretty interesting. Jimmy LeBlanc would say, send offenders first to those who provide adequate programming. Well, make it a statute. Number one, offender goes where there's programming. Oh, I'm sorry, no programming? Well, you get the last offender on the last day at the end of the barrel. Oh, wait, we don't have any more? I'm sorry. That is a way to work on that problem. I will tell you that until after this session is over, there are a couple of reasons that you will not be able to do anything to address mandatory minimums and benefit restrictions in crimes of violence. This governor won't do it, and the chairman of the Senate Judiciary C will not do it. He won't even call it for a hearing. However, this is their last year, and planning takes more than a year anyway. So you need to start thinking about it. I want to talk to you for just a second about drug courts and reentry courts and other specialty courts. And I will tell you, 3 minutes, I will be less than 3 minutes. They are wonderful things. They are wonderful things. The reentry court run in Orleans Parish is absolutely fabulous. Here are the big problems. One, it is a teeny weeny boutique in a Walmart world of sentences. And number two, when the offenders come back, they have to have a job that the court tries to arrange. Business and the unions, guys, have to help in that effort. Those guys need jobs. If they come back a welder, they've got to have a welding job. And yes, I'm sorry, why would I give a job to an offender when I got a guy who didn't do a blessed thing wrong, who's the second guy in line? Because we don't want him to reoffend. That's why. So all of the specialty courts are really, really great. The problem is that they are the seats in the bus are too few for the need. So that is an overview of where we are. The last thing I want to say before we go to questions is this. Maybe in the distant past, people who ran for the legislature were statesmen. And maybe we have some statesmen today. Maybe we do. By and large, what we have, though, are people who listen to the squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they want the job, but I do know they want to get reelected. And they are afraid to do something that's opposed to the people who vote. And they are afraid to do something that it's opposed to the people who talk. If you don't vote and you don't talk, then nothing will change. They really only care about the people who vote. So if you don't vote, then don't expect anything to happen. Mm. So that's it.
Thank you. We've come to a very important part.
We were just listening to Judge Frederica H. Wicker, who actually is a Tulane Law School alum. She graduated from here in 1977, and she is on, from what I believe, is the 5th District Court. They did say it in the talk. Yeah, Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal, and that's the state court here. And she did talk about sentencing reforms and people aging out of crime. She said a lot, kind of, there's a lot packed in there. And seemingly, like, as someone that has really, you know, radical politics and is really looking at how people who are supposedly progressive and left, how they're framing and how they're pushing us to move things. So one thing that I do notice is I work with formerly incarcerated people, and she uses the language of offender, calling these people offenders, when we know that the system isn't working properly. So we don't even know if people actually did what they said that they did, and that the system is targeting folks, that the system is using, that the system is being used to invisibilize poverty and homelessness. And all these different things. Mental illness. So she doesn't bring up any of the kind of, you know, she acts like it's a little broken, and maybe, you know, sentencing reform is going to, you know, be a big push in fixing it, which I disagree with. I definitely think that it's a move, but of course I don't believe in caging people, so reforming, you know, a...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard in Louisiana because our system is so broken and the statistics are so staggering that any time there's even just a little bit of something that might make things better, you're like, yes, you know, like, I want that. but that's not really, like, a good position, I think, to be request, you know, for hoping for, right?
Well, it's like when you're really hungry, you know, it's like when you're really hungry and you get something to eat and you're like, wow, that's one of the best things I've ever tasted. When then if you eat it another time, you're like, that really wasn't that good. I was just that hungry. So we're really that hungry for change. We're that hungry for justice and freedom and liberation, right? Where we'll kind of take any little crumbs. There was someone that did respond at the end, a young woman, Brittany, who also has a pretty radical analysis, and she talked about how we focus on the finances of this, and it is a tool that folks are using to move folks that are on the opposite side or whatever side they're on to move folks. They talk about how much money we're so quote unquote wasting, caging people in this way. Waste is such a weird thing to. That's why I say quote unquote. Not that we're wasting a lot of resources caging people. Period. We should not be doing that. But she brought up that like, I don't want to be part of that argument that it's about the money. And I have struggled with that too. And I understand that it is a tactic. And at this point, I'm like, however we can alleviate some of the burden, some of the pressure of this system, I'll say that if I need to. However, it's not about the money. It's about people's lives.
Yeah, and I think, you know, something that doesn't ever get talked about enough is the psychological toll that takes on everyone in society to be passing by, you know, OPP every day and knowing what's going on in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a psychic thing, absolutely, and you can feel it throughout the city. So,
yep, definitely. I know that there's something going on today for folks that want to get in the streets and
yeah, I mean, there's so much going on today at 5:30 at. Individuals are being asked to meet over at Jackson Square for a event that's going to be going on there. Also, this Friday at 6 o'clock, starting at Lafayette Square, there's going to be another protest. And then on Saturday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. over at Exhibit B on the West Bank that we were talking about last week, there's going to be Black poets speaking out about all of the injustice that's been going on.
Yeah. So people are still taken to the streets and still protesting, still resisting in different ways. One thing I also, going back to her talk too, one thing that I did want to mention was the ways in which she talked about armed robbery. She talks about it like it's like murder where the gun doesn't go off. That, I think, is a really bad way to describe armed robbery, considering all of I look at everything like it's on a spectrum, right? So look at armed robbery as a spectrum. So on the tail end of that spectrum would be serious violence occurred to someone. They're not murdered. They weren't necessarily attempted to be murdered, but there was serious violence. Could be a gun, could be another weapon. She also specifically mentions gun. Armed robbery is armed, not necessarily with a gun. And then you look at the other side of the spectrum, you could have only motioned that you have some kind of weapon, or, you know, you don't actually even have to pull it out. The person doesn't have to see it. Like if you have it, you could possibly be armed with like scissors or a stick or something like that. That could they could turn that into armed robbery. And when we talk about armed robbery, we can never talk about it without talking about systemic racism, without talking about poverty, and without talking about capitalism. At least to name a few things that we need to talk about when we talk about that specifically. She's making it like, oh, it's dangerous, but you know what? These people will get old and they will age out of this kind of violence, instead of like, hey, these people were put in really bad positions and they got desperate. And you know what? There's also this culture of violence that we live in. There's this cops and robbers kind of game that the kids might feel like they're playing, and they get to come home with a little bit of loot and maybe help out their struggling family. So there's all of these things that are going on, but she just makes it like this offender is committing this offense, and it's not that simple, and you're a judge. And it's these people that are in these positions. She also talked about how she was ignorant of like where people were going. You're high up in the criminal justice field, and you don't know where the people that you're sending are going. These are the problems in which we're talking about. People are removed. These are people's lives we're talking about. People's lives. When she says that the Louisiana judges like to give out a lot of time, that I don't even know how I could begin to stress how many people get caught up in this idea that, like, hey, this is a cultural personality thing that these judges just like to. What is the system around that allows these judges to do that? Why don't we look at these kind of things instead of saying, hey, we need to vote and be loud and talk about things that are bad? No, we need to end a system that is profiting off of people the way off of exploiting vulnerable, keeping people vulnerable, and then exploiting and profiting off of their vulnerabilities. Also, one last thing that I want to say that she talked about was the paying for the person's medical bills and stuff like that, and how it's paid. It first off, you know, I don't care. They're in jail. We got to pay however we're paying for their medical. That's not my personal thing, but I want to just say how she talked about it. She didn't talk about it like, hey, that person was in jail for a good period of their life, for most of their life. Those conditions that was caused by being in jail. Mm-hmm. That was caused by the food that they were feeding. That was caused by the conditions. That is what jail. So you don't just give up your time. You're giving up your health.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of the things you're speaking of just points to the reality of how difficult it is for us to even consider people who are caught up in the criminal justice system, no matter how falsely it is that they're there, as human. Mm-hmm. And that is such a huge leap for people to make in their heads, even people like her who sees the human quality mm-hmm. face every single day. You know, it's the whole thing is set up for us to disregard those people's lives. And I guess I just invite everyone to go down that road and really consider what it means to you that it's so hard for you to fathom that these people's lives have some value beyond just being quote-unquote offenders. So
yeah.
You're listening to WTUL New Orleans.